to work, looking over my shoulder. Days in and out, looking over my shoulder like a good soldier. Never knowing when the bombs will fall.
With renewed calls by President Trump to fortify the U.S. border, with Mexico taking center stage this week, a new musical on stage at the Public Theater feels particularly urgent. It's called Miss You Like Hell, and it's about a complicated relationship between an undocumented mother and her estranged daughter. The mother, Beatrice, is from Mexico, and she's facing a deportation hearing after living in the U.S. for almost two decades. Her estranged daughter, 16-year-old Olivia, writes a blog for people she calls castaways and has contemplated jumping off a bridge. Beatrice seeks out Olivia and convinces her to go on a cross-country road trip. And along the way, they meet a diverse cast of characters. All the while, Beatrice's immigration hearing draws closer. Miss You Like Hell is a powerful show, and I'm so glad to be joined today by the Tony and Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright behind it, Chiara Alegría Hudis, and the two stars of the show, Daphne Rubin-Vega, who plays Beatrice, and Giselle Jimenez, who portrays Olivia. Welcome, ladies, all to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello.
It's a pleasure having you here. And I saw the show recently, so it's nice to be able to talk to you guys face-to-face and in person. Chiara, you started writing this musical several years ago when President Obama was actually in office. And the Obama administration did deport millions of people. So I'm wondering, is this what originally inspired your story? And do you think that the show takes on extra political resonance with Donald Trump now in office?
Deportations did surge at that time. And so that was definitely on my mind in terms of telling a story that involved immigration issues that threatened to separate a family. But of course, it wasn't new with Obama, and I was aware, even from the community work that my mom did, the community organizing in the Latino community in Philadelphia when I was a child.
What kind of work was that?
I witnessed similar issues. She ran a center called Casa Comadre that was a women's health center. Mm. But one of the barriers to women seeking the health care that they needed was actually their fear of interacting with any sort of health system. For fear of getting on a system's radar. And so one of the ways that mom was able to help was to tell those women about what, inform those women about what their rights were, how the system gathered information and didn't, and encourage them to seek safe services, especially in relation to prenatal care.
I see. So I was wondering how much of this story is autobiographical. I know it starts in Philadelphia. You're from Philadelphia.
Yes. I mean, my spirit and mind are in every line of the piece, for sure. It doesn't reflect an experience I have had directly, but it is inspired by experiences within the community and within family and friends.
And so in this song that we opened up with, it's called Over My Shoulder, and Beatrice is singing about the experience of living as an undocumented immigrant in the U.S. Can you tell me how you came up with the lyrics and what you wanted to get across about living as an undocumented person in the U.S.?
Well, I think that there's a pervasive fear of simply living, of living a public life. And so what starts out with an instinct towards privacy as a self-protective measure becomes silence. And so actually a huge percentage of our population is not part of the public dialogue out of fear of self-protection. And so Beatrice sings about trying to just enjoy her life, her success, her work, her community, but while always feeling this need to look over her shoulder in case it's about to all be taken away.
And so Daphne, you play Beatrice, and you were also the original Mimi in Rent. And the original Conchita in Anna in the Tropics. Plus, you played Lucy in Jack Goes Boating, which you starred in alongside Philip Seymour Hoffman in both play and film. So how does playing Beatrice compare to your past work?
Oh. She's another character altogether. Compare... This particular role is, I think it's a masterpiece for me. I don't know how else to
talk a little bit about who Beatrice is.
Beatrice is is an every woman. She's a a simple woman who has a big heart, who has a huge appetite for love, for life, and for living, and she goes all in, you know. There's so many things that I've experienced, so many iterations, and so many beautiful lines have been cut. But there was one that talked about, you know, the kind of spirit that goes into the burning building as opposed to running away from it. And Beatrice is the one who goes in to save lives.
And so you are from Panama, is that right? You were
yes,
born in Panama?
Yes, I was born in Panama.
And so does that immigrant experience help you relate to Beatrice at all?
Absolutely. My mother, my mother's family immigrated from Barbados to Panama. So,
I see.
It was like the big burgeoning of the Panama Canal. And, well, you know, there was a lot of industry there. So that's where they immigrated to get a better life. And my mother, in turn, came to the United States to get yet another nursing degree because her nursing degree from Panama didn't merit here, and that was where her love was. So she came and she did it all over again with the hopes of returning to Panama with a better life, but, you know, ended up bringing, you know, her children here, getting married, having us get adopted from, you know, my American stepdad. And
I see.
You know, the whole opportunity for better life, better education.
Right. So some of
freedom, as it were. And, you know, she's gone. So now I've looked at old documents of like all the stuff, the paperwork that had to be written and the immigration that had to be gone through and my brothers having to show up.
Wow.
On long lines.
How old were you when you got here?
Well, it's a twofold story. When I the first time I came here, I was 3 years old, and I came with my aunt and uncle. But when I came to stay, I was about 8, 9.
I see. And so your mother has passed away? Is that
yes.
What you meant? Okay. And now you're playing the mother
yes.
role to Olivia, and that's you, Giselle. And so, Giselle, you've played strong Latina characters in national and regional productions, from Rosalia in West Side Story to Vanessa in The Heights. And so how do you relate to Olivia in Miss You Like Hell?
I think Olivia, for me, she has a wall up, and it's very similar to how I function in the world as well. As a Latina woman, I was taught, you know, strength is not crying, and mm-hmm. strength is just not feeling things and putting that wall up. And that's sadly because of what our ancestors have had to go through and experience. And in that, we have been taught that. There's a vulnerability, although, with this character, and it is in me, and I think in everyone as well. I also, like Daph, lost my mother at a young age. So it's a very close to home story for me.
Sure.
It's also a blessing to be able to do a character that not only is Latina, but she's intelligent. You know, she's not a tip.
She loves poetry and art.
Yeah, and it's so refreshing to be able to portray a character that way, when in most cases she's either, you know, a young parent or into drugs or stealing or, you know.
Right, these stereotypes.
Stereotypes, yeah. And that's not all Latina women, and it's just really, I think it's really important to be able to do more work where you see Latina women in other lights.
Sure, and I wanted to go back really quick though to something that you said about building up walls, but also having vulnerability, because I think for me the moment in the play that was the most touching was this moment when Olivia puts down that wall and her mom hugs her from behind. Well, her mom hugs her from behind. She's still sort of stiff. And then slowly she lets go and she lets that vulnerability come through. Can you guys talk about that a little bit?
Well, for Olivia, touch is very, very important. And she hasn't experienced touch for most of her life in a way that's loving and caring. And there are some parts of the show where whenever Beatrice does touch her, she feels this like this rush of energy, but also like a relaxation.
Mm-hmm.
It's the first time is, you know, right before she tells me to pack a bag, she touches my shoulder. It's like, whoa, my mom just touched me, you know? And then the next time it's like, she starts to do my hair and it's like, wow, she's touching my hair. You know what I mean? And
right.
And so as the show progresses, she is slowly, maybe not even aware of it, letting her guard down. Even to the point where, you know, we're in the hotel scene and we have, I don't know if I'm giving things away or not. I want everyone to come and see this show. But yeah, it's, once we get to that hotel scene and we have that big fight and we say what we say, I think as the story progresses, she's letting me know more and more things that I thought were different. So right. All of my facts are like readjusting in my mind. And I think that when we get to that point where she touches me, it's earned, you know? And
right.
It's like I finally, after all the fight and the pullback, I finally let it go.
So you two clearly put your heart and soul into these heavy scenes. Daphne, how did you maintain that emotional commitment for each performance?
We've been working on this for a few years. The first time I read this script and did the workshop, it was like 2014, I said, I have to do this. I felt like how Jessica Tandy must have felt when Tennessee Williams wrote Streetcar.
Wow.
You know, like someone is writing something and I'm not doing it by default or as an exception to the rule, but
right.
Because of. Was so powerful, and I fell so completely in love with this character. And like we talk about, you know, our mothers, our ancestors now are elsewhere. They're not on this plane of Earth. And so it was the best way that I could pay an homage and really give a big shout out to mothers.
Right.
It was my way of being completely in a role. So to answer your question, it took a while. I mean, there were years and workshops where I prayed to get through a song without, you know, welling up.
Wow.
And part of the work is to, you know, use your instrument properly.
Yeah. Well, that's what makes the scene so powerful as
yeah.
well.
Yeah.
I also wanted to talk about, you know, men are absent from this play. Well, not completely, but for
you've
instance...
You've got biker dudes in this play.
Yes, that's true.
There are men
but
there.
They are there. But for instance, Olivia's father is mm-hmm. mentioned, but that's about it. And the public itself points out that mother-daughter relationships are rarely presented on stage. And when they are, the moms are often seen as these troubled, problemed people. But in this play, the women are the ones sort of seeking their power and their identity. And as I said, the father is barely mentioned. So I'm assuming that was intentional.
Definitely intentional. You know, it's funny. It's just the way that spaces, that powerful spaces affect us and shift our compass is so unnatural, right? So that if a play was mostly about male spaces, that would just still feel kind of natural and normal, whereas it is still slightly jarring for people to be so fiercely from a woman's point of view for much of a narrative. Even though there are wonderful male characters in this piece, it is from the women's point of view, and that does feel unsettling somehow, you know, where it's like, but what about the men? When are they going to get their say? You know, what's their side of the story? And it's like, well, they, you know, that's for another play. It's you know, that here this is about, and in particular, I didn't want, they're two complicated women, and there are moments when they do hurt each other, and I think create difficulty for each other, but actually, that wasn't my main interest. My main interest is, like, let these women be as complicated, as self-contradictory, as funny, as embarrassing, as silly and playful as reflects the women that I know in my family, you know, not just a part of it, but all of it. And so that it especially includes a great amount of self-contradiction, because sure, all people have those conflicts, you know, so teasing those things out in the mother and daughter.
Can I say something about that also, just because there is something jarring? By the same token, there's something extremely consoling and recognizable about the element of having theatricalizing ancestors, you know, much like, you know, watching Coco and hearing people talk about mm-hmm. our culture and going like, yeah, that's right. Like, there is space for that voice.
Right. And so, Giselle, what was it like for you to be part of a woman-centric show? Did you really embrace that?
Oh my God. It's the best experience I've ever had. I'm all about women power, and to be able to be a part of not only two female leads, but the creative team, they're all female. And it's such an honor to be able to perform work knowing that it was done by strong, smart, powerful women. Mm-hmm. I'm very, very proud to be a part of this piece.
Mm. And so what do you guys hope, Kiara, what do you hope that the audience takes away from this?
Well, I do think one of the hopes is at the core of the discussion we were just having, which is just engaging with a woman's story. This, I am not anticipating an all-female audience, nor would I want that. This is for everyone. This piece is for everyone. But to engage with a story about two women who are not just caretakers, but also demand to receive care, too. One of the emotional climaxes of the piece is when mom steps up and says, no, I demand to be cared for also. But I also want them to have a great time. At its core, it is an emotional story. It is a sad story. But actually, throughout, there's a lot of levity and fun and play that I want the audience to really just have a great time and laugh a lot and meet these great characters that are on this Odyssey-like road trip. So just to take that journey with us. You know, and I guess the other thing is more just about my point of view, that I tend to think the best about people, and I don't think that this is a story about kind people, and that does reflect my worldview. I think that people are kinder than systems are, mm-hmm. And so that systems tend to be quite cruel and racist and punishing in ways that actually the individuals even within those systems aren't necessarily. And so that bit of advocacy and storytelling, which is, you know, it's not about changing people's minds and hearts. It's actually about changing systems in a pragmatic way. To live in a kinder nation.
And how was this show different for you? Well, actually, why did you make it a musical? Because it was a play at first.
I made it a musical because in it, the basic plot is not an immigration story. It's not a, you know, even a mother-daughter story. It's they get in a car and drive across the country. So what are they passing? Who are they meeting? What are they seeing? And this country's short history is saturated with incredible music. It's our country sings, our country rocks, our country wails the blues, you know, and so you couldn't really capture the essence of, you know, that window rolled down on that highway without, like, what's the cassette tape in the deck, you know, what's on the iPod shuffle. So it had to sing.
And Yellowstone National Park is a big sort of character in the play too. So is that a special place for you?
I wrote this piece before I ever went to Yellowstone.
Oh, you did.
Yeah, but I've now been after having written the piece. But it's so iconic. It's so iconic. And so I wanted to get a lot of the unknown pockets and corners of the nation, but also the absolutely centrally important, you know, landmarks in the nation. And so Yellowstone is that.
Well, ladies, it's been a pleasure talking to you. How long do people have to go and see your play?
Through May 6th.
Through May 6th. Great. Well, I'm Cindy Rodriguez, and I've been speaking with Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright Kiara Alegría Hudis, along with Daphne Rubin Vega and Giselle Jimenez, who are starring in her new musical, Miss You Like Hell. Thank you so much for joining me today. This is Midday on WNYC. We'll be right back after a break.
I wish that I'd never seen Sundays. She's my negative space. She's my hole in the world. The echoing empty of a motherless girl in all of the ways. She is a ghost Sundays. But I remember Saturdays, her weekend visit, the way she scooped me in her arms. Time seemed infinite. Our silly little dances and how we'd sway, the nonsense rhymes we'd love.